Hey guys, it's Rob Oliver, and welcome to Learning from Smart People. I'm glad that you're here today. Today is one of those fun days in which you may not view it as a fun day, but to me, it's a fun day. I don't have an interview scheduled today. It's just going to be me sharing with you, and it is my privilege to be here, just you and me, having a talk, having a conversation. And really, this is one of those times where I want to kind of build on the relationship, build on the rapport that we have as a host and an audience. Because, listen, without you, there's no point in me being here. Literally, I will be here talking to myself and recording myself and just uploading to the vast nothingness that is cyberspace. I need you. So today, I've got some things that I want to share with you, and I want to make sure that as I'm sharing those with you, that it's something that resonates with you. And listen, I've got an idea for an upcoming episode. I would love to answer questions that you may have. So my suggestion would be, if you have questions, if there are guests that have, you know, provoked a thought for you, or if there's something that you have picked up along the way, send that in. Send me an email. It's rob@learningfromsmartpeople.com. And as I receive those, I'll be happy to compile those and put those together in a question and answer episode. But for today, I've got an idea. And here's what I'm going to do. I've got three stories that I want to share with you. These stories all coming out of my still falling book. And I want to share with you both the story, kind of what I learned from the story. And then as a wrap up, I just want to bring everything in a full circle all together so that you can see not just how this is a story that is about my life, but it's a story that applies to all of us. And there are three lessons that ultimately come down together. And I think I hope that you'll benefit from what I've got to share with you today. The first story is from when I first started out in the whole speaking business. I was working full time, and the only way that I could figure out how to get my name out there, get my recognition out there, was to go and do free speaking engagements. And for anyone who is a new speaker in the market and wanting to learn, you know, how can I do this? There are a number of service clubs that are out there that are always having meetings. And for me, I connected with the Rotary Club, I connected with the Lions Club, and they've got meetings. Most of them have meetings every week, if not every 2 weeks, and they always are looking for speakers for their meetings. And so I was going out speaking at Rotary Clubs. Most of the time it was a lunch or a dinner experience, and so they weren't paying me, but I was getting a free dinner out of everything. It's not too bad of a deal. I would go out, I would speak, get my free meal, and then sell some books afterwards. A lot of those clubs are older people, and the clubs have been around for a long time. There were not a ton of people in the audience, but I would generally be able to sell enough books to pay for my gas getting to and from, and, you know, fill my tank for the week. After having done a number of these club meetings, I remember I went to one in particular, and it wasn't a huge audience. And by saying it wasn't a huge audience, I mean, it was like 20 people there, 25 people. And while I'm there, I'm sharing my story. I'm sharing what's going on with me. I'm sharing what I've learned from that. And afterwards, I'm selling books. And this guy comes up to me at the end, and he's got like a big smile on his face, and he buys a copy of my book. And he looks at me and he's like, you know, I really appreciate what you had to say today. And my heart kind of is like, oh, this is good. Somebody that I connected with, somebody that it's hearing what I have to say, and it resonates with them. And then he kind of dropped the hammer on me. He said, you know, when I came here today, I was thinking about my problems, and I was thinking about all the problems that I have. And in listening to you talk today, I realized that, like, you got real problems, and my problems are not as big as your problems are. And it just helped me to put my problems in perspective. And I was just like, oh my word. So I went from the elated feeling of being like Sally Fields at the Oscars, like, you love me, you really love me, you get me, you connect with me, I've connected with my audience, I'm feeling fantastic, this is great. And all of a sudden I'm just crushed, because my message is not, I've got problems, you don't have problems, you should be ashamed of yourself for thinking about how big your problems are. You should feel like, you know, you are dealing with insignificant problems. if I can succeed with my tremendous problems, then you should be able to succeed with your trivial and teeny problems. That's not what I'm talking about at all. My message is not about that. My message is about the fact that everybody's got problems. Everybody has things that they deal with. You know, it's funny. I was listening to Nick Vukovic talk about, he's the guy, he was born without any arms and two very small feet. And like, he was talking about the fact that coming from a broken home, coming from a single parent home, may be a bigger limitation than being born without limbs. And I thoroughly agree with what he had to say, because I think coming from a background without parent involvement, coming from a place where you didn't receive a good education, or there are so many different experiences that people go through that are traumatic experiences, that are difficult experiences, that have a really profound influence on shaping how you view life and how you understand what's going on in your life. Those experiences are oftentimes much bigger obstacles, much bigger difficulties, much bigger problems than what I have. Listen, I'm coming to understand something else about this. When I first acquired my spinal cord injury, I thought that not being able to walk and having limited use of my arms and hands would be the biggest problem that I would face. I thought this is going to be the major issue that I'm going to have to deal with for the rest of my life. I went so far as to include a line in my speaking. I said, it's pretty much, I'm at a place where I know that every day is going to be the same. Tomorrow, I'm going to wake up and I'm going to have the same limitations that I have today. I'm still not going to be able to use my legs, and I'm still going to have the same limited use of my arms and hands that I had today and yesterday and the day before that. What I didn't realize was there's a whole lot of peripheral experiences that go with having a spinal cord injury. And I don't want to get into, the whole thing to bring anybody down today, but there is urinary tract infections, and there's complications. There's just any number of complications that arise. And so in that, I kind of learned two things. Number one, I learned that when you look at somebody, you don't always see the biggest obstacles and difficulties that they face. But the second part is that it really made me look at what my core message is. What is the message that I am sharing? I don't want the message that I'm sharing to be one that puts other people in a place of guilt, shame, and fear. I don't want to put them in a place where they are feeling like, just how good they have it and how bad I have it. That's not what my message is. I had to completely reevaluate my message, and I had to adapt it so that as I was going forward, my focus wasn't so much on my disability. It wasn't so much on what's been taken away from me, on what I can't do, but it's on the universality of limitations. And in that experience, in that meeting, it helped me to clarify my message, to find out what is my true core element. What do I want to communicate with people? And I think that each of us needs to have that moment in our lives when, as a business, what is the core message of our business? What do we want other people to hear from us? What do we want other people to know about us? What is it that makes us the business that people want to go to? And so in that experience, what I found is my true message. And my encouragement to you in that is you can work through this too. You can find out what is your true core message. It was interesting. I had Dolores Hirschman on a while back, and she was talking about finding the cornerstone concept of your business. That's what I'm talking about. What is it that you do? What is it that makes your business your business? What is it that makes you who you are? And how do you communicate that to others? What is the message that you want them to take away from it? I'll tell you this. Originally, my thought with that guy is like, how could you have listened to me for this whole time and not heard what I was trying to say? And then I realized, listen, I'm the communicator. I'm the one that's sharing the message. And what I need to do is make sure that as I'm sharing that message, I'm putting it into a framework and putting it into an understanding that people will gather from it, not to be ashamed, not to be belittled, not to feel like their problems aren't real problems, but to understand that we all have problems. Problems are a part of the human condition. And to then create a message. And as we create that message and we share that message, that it's something that truly communicates the essence of who we are and the essence of what we stand for. So story number one is about finding your true message and sharing what you're all about. Story number two, I remember I will start this story off this way. I have a predisposition against sheltered workshops. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the concept of a sheltered workshop is a place where people with disabilities go and they are paid by the piece to perform, you know, rudimentary tasks. So in other words, let me give you an example. You know, the sunshine things that you hang, the sun catchers that you hang on your window, and there's usually a suction cup with a hook on it, and then the sun catcher hangs on that. And you've seen, you know, the suction cup has a little hook that's stuck on there. And it's really hard to get, a machine to do that. So there are these sheltered workshops. And what they do is they bring in people with disabilities and they have in front of them three things. They've got a box that has a bunch of suction cups. They've got a box that has a bunch of hooks. And then they have a cardboard sheet in front of them that has 100 circles on it. They're in lines. There's 10 circles in a row and then 10 lines on the page. And so what they do is they pick up a suction cup, they put a hook on it, and then they put it down on the sheet. And at the end of the day or at the end of their shift or when the sheet is full, they take account of how many they have done and they pay them by the piece. Now, I'm going to tell you that there's part of this that kind of is cool to me because I feel bad for people with disabilities who end up stuck in a nursing facility or end up stuck somewhere where they're not getting out, not doing anything, and they have no sense of value. People in a sheltered workshop are having a sense that they're doing something, that they're performing a meaningful task, and they're receiving payment for that. So that's kind of my good side of sheltered workshops. But the really thing that kind of gets me about it is, a sheltered workshop is a way of skirting the limits of the minimum wage, because there is no other group that you could fit in there and say, we're going to pay you less than minimum wage based on a performance. So this is something where they're being brought in and they're being paid less than minimum wage. And because it's a per piece basis, they get away with it. And that's not cool to me, and I'm not down with that, right? So I tell you all of that to tell you that one of the most important lessons that I learned about life and about relationships happened in a sheltered workshop. I went to the sheltered workshop. I was supposed to meet with a young lady, and I was going to do an interview with her about something else. And this particular day, she was putting lids on travel mugs. If you've ever been to a convenience store and you get like the travel mug that you put your coffee in and you pay like $1.99 and maybe you get like free refills for a year or something. All right. I don't know if there's a machine that puts the tops on those or not, but in this particular day, her job was putting tops on travel mugs. So we talked, and I was really expecting her to be kind of down on her situation. I was feeling sad about being in a sheltered workshop and seeing the fact that all these people were being paid less than minimum wage in order to do their job. But as we talked, we just kind of, I let all that go. I figured, let's talk about life. Let's talk about what's going on with you. And we started to talk, and she shared with me during the interview that she was a junk food junkie. And I'm like, cool, I can relate to that. Tell me about it. Tell me what's your junk food of choice? And she's like, chocolate. Anything chocolate. I love chocolate. I especially love brownies. I'm like, oh, I understand that. I feel a kindred spirit with you. I love brownies. I love dark chocolate. And I like, are there particular kind of brownies that you like? And I was expecting her to share with me like a brand name or something like that. And she says, oh, I really love my neighbor's brownies. And I'm going to make a confession here, and you can judge me if you would like, but my confession is that my immediate thought was like, I wonder how she gets her neighbor's brownies. I have this vision of the, you know, kind of the brownies sitting out on the windowsill cooling and her going over and stealing her neighbor's brownies. But so I asked her, I said, how do you get your neighbor's brownies? And she says, oh, she gives them to me. And before I could help myself, I asked why. And so I just, again, to kind of keep this all in context, I'm in a sheltered workshop. I'm dealing with a young lady who has some intellectual disabilities. She doesn't have any physical disabilities. She's got some cognitive impairment, a learning delay, whatever the politically correct term is. And so her answer kind of blew me away. And she says, oh, well, she gives them to me because I walk her dog. You see, she's an older lady and she has a big dog. And when she tries to walk the dog pulls her over. But I'm younger and I'm stronger. And so I walk her dog and she makes me brownies. And I was just like, mind blown. And here's why. Because I'm looking at this girl and I'm thinking, I'm feeling bad for her. I'm feeling bad about all the things that she can't do. I'm feeling bad about the opportunities that she's missing being stuck in this sheltered workshop. I'm feeling bad about the relationships that she, you know, I'm just, and it just reminded me that even me as a disability advocate, I am making prejudgments about this girl and I'm making assumptions about her that are absolutely wrong. And it's a shame. And as I'm looking at this, I realize this. Everybody has some strengths that they bring to the table that they may not realize. Everybody's got something to offer to other people that is of value. And this young lady, it was walking the dog. And she didn't really think it was anything special. Like, I just walked the dog. And I'm pretty sure that her neighbor didn't think it was anything special to say, I just bake brownies. But when we look for ways in which our abilities are able to serve other people, we begin to form meaningful relationships. And instead of just being takers in relationship, we become reciprocal. They become reciprocal relationships where I'm giving something of value to you. You are giving something of value to me. We are both getting something of value out of this relationship. And as a result of that, we both see the value in the other. We both have an appreciation for what the other person is, what they can do, and what they bring into this relationship. And my takeaway from that was simply this: don't let anyone, including yourself, ever underestimate your value. Because listen, the premise of this show, right, is learning from smart people. And I can't tell you how many people I've said, like, I'd love to have you on the show. And they're like, I don't know if I'm really a smart person. And they underestimate the value of the knowledge that they have. They're like, well, this is just what I know from my experience. This is just what I've learned in my life. And my life's not anything special, but each of us has a value in the experiences that we've gone through, in the experiences that we've had, in the learning that we have accumulated over the course of our lifetime. We all have value because of what we've gone through and because of what we've learned. We also all have value because of what we can do. Here's a young lady that has some cognitive limitations, but she can walk dogs. Okay. I've got some physical limitations, but I can help people with computer issues. I've been helping people with getting their books published and learning how the process of writing a book, of getting it edited, getting it put into the proper format, and getting it both published as a physical hard copy and getting it published as an ebook. These are things that I've learned how to do. And originally in my mind, it was like, well, that's not a big deal. It's nothing major. This is just what I learned how to do. But I realized, you know what? There are other people that don't know how to do that, other people that haven't gone through that experience. And a lot of the people that I'm working with are expressing such appreciation to me, like, hey, I didn't know how to do this, but you made it easy. Don't ever let anyone, including yourself, underestimate the value of who you are, of what you bring to the table, of what your experiences are, of what you have learned, and of what you can do. And really, if you're ever in one of those places where you're feeling kind of worthless and down and low, look for those opportunities to say, what are the abilities that I have and what can I do for someone else? And in doing something for someone else, it's going to be something that builds you up. It's going to be something that builds a relationship up, and it's going to be something that helps you move in a positive direction. So story number two was all about the fact of don't ever underestimate your own value. The last story is, I don't know how you sleep at night, but I sleep pretty well for about 2/3 of the night. And then sometime in the morning I wake up, but early in the morning, probably 4 o'clock, maybe. I don't know. I'm laying in bed. I don't have an alarm clock where I can see it. And it's not a big deal what time I wake up. But when I am sleeping, I'm dreaming. And I remember we had gone on a cruise, and this was probably a month or two after we came back from our cruise, and I had the most magnificent dream. I was dreaming that we were on the beach at a little island called Coco Cay, and it was white beach and blue water, and it was kind of like, you ever have those dreams where they are not only is it like a dream in Technicolor where everything is just so vibrant and so beautiful, but like this was a full on all senses dream. I could smell the ocean. I could smell, like, on the cruise, they're all about food, right? And so they have kind of like some kind of barbecue thing going on over there where they're grilling different things. And so I'm in my dream. I'm looking at the water. I'm smelling the cooking. I'm smelling the beach. I'm feeling the sun on my skin. It's like, oh, this is magnificent. And in the middle of my dream, everything went black. And what I realized was the reason it went black was because I had just opened my eyes and it was pitch black in my room. And I felt kind of some discomfort somewhere in my chest. And it was because my wife had firmly planted her elbow in my chest and woke me up to say, "You are snoring so loud, you got to stop." And I was just like, oh my word. You mean to tell me you pulled me out of the world's greatest dream just to get me to stop snoring? Like, this isn't fair. This isn't right. And I was like, oh, okay. Of course, I didn't say that to her. But it was, you know, it was there, and it was, so I let it go. And then I tried to go back to sleep because I wanted my dream back. And I thought, okay, if I can just close my eyes and get right back into my dream, I will be right where I want to be. And so I closed my eyes, and I tried to will myself back to sleep. I tried everything in my power to get back to sleep, to get that dream back. And it's difficult enough to go to sleep just, you know, on your own. But to try and force yourself to go to sleep is almost impossible. And I laid there for the next, I don't know, it could have been 15 minutes. It could have been 3 hours, but I just wanted to go back to sleep. I wanted my dream back, and I couldn't. And eventually I must have drifted off to sleep. The alarm went off the next morning. I woke up and there was just nothing. There was just an expanse of blackness from when I had been woken to when the alarm went off, and I never got my dream back. And so for the next couple nights, I went back to sleep hoping to get my dream back. And eventually I decided my wife is a dream snatcher. She took my dream from me. And you know what? I never did get it back. I never dreamed that dream again. And I spent a little bit of time being kind of cranky and miserable about it, because it's like, I had this great dream and now it's gone. And eventually I came to realize that, you know what? That dream is not what's so important. I am never going to be able to dream that dream again. But what I can do is I can dream a new dream. And I can enjoy that, and I can learn from that, and that new dream can be something different, and it can be wonderful as well. And maybe what I had was the world's greatest dream, but I can now have another fantastic dream. And it really got me thinking about people that have gone through life dealing with dream snatchers. And to me, the dream snatchers are, you know, you hear people tell a story, and a lot of times you'll hear like a guy tell a story about how he was going to play football in college or going to play basketball in the NBA, but then he blew out his knee, or there was something that happened along the way that snatched his dream. And he is in that space that I was in, where it's like that dream is the only dream that you want. It's the only thing that you're pursuing. And if you can't have that, then you are going to spend the rest of your life being miserable about the dream that was snatched from you. I think I know a little bit about this because, you know, at 21, having a spinal cord injury, all of my kind of aspirations about where I was going in life, I feel like they kind of got taken away a little bit. And yet what I had to learn is that I can dream a new dream. Oh. I can go to a new place. So the answer is, don't let anybody snatch your dream. Don't let it be you. Don't let it be someone else. Don't ever stop dreaming. Whether it's someone that's trying to wake you up from the dream and say that dream isn't for you, whether it's your own self saying, that dream has been taken away from me. Don't ever let anyone take your dream away. Don't ever stop dreaming. So here's what you've got. There are three simple points that I want you to get out of today's podcast. Number one, you have a message. Find your true message and share that message. Number two, don't ever underestimate your value. And number three, don't ever stop dreaming. I appreciate you being with me today. I hope that you've enjoyed this as much as I have. Have a wonderful rest of your day, and I will remind you, as always, that when you stop learning, you stop living. Have a great day, everybody.